Thank you so much. Thank you, Kit. Thank you, Chris and Brad and Sherry and who else? Everybody, thank you. Thank you, Jesus. I just thank them all. Thank you, God. Allah, Krishna, Buddha. We'll just thank them all. Hi, how y'all doing? Oh, and this is really an interesting thing to do when you're a piano player. It's coming home from the Unity Convention, putting away my toiletry kit and put it in the drawer where it goes, and somehow took off the end of my finger with my razor. I'm not sure what happened there, but I was like, I think we're all right. It was like, I don't think I left any blood on your piano, so I think we're good. And all of that has nothing to do with anything. So how many of you grew up in Sunday school? I was from one of those families that we had a small little country church in Oklahoma. We had Sunday school for everybody, grown-ups and adults, at 9:30. And then at 10:30, we all went into the service together, and we had service. And then we'd go home, maybe take naps, work in the garden a little bit. About 7 o'clock, we came back to church for Sunday evening service. We got to sing out of the better hymnal at the Sunday evening service. That's what I remember. And then we had Wednesday night Bible study and choir practice. And then occasionally we'd have a roving itinerant preacher come through, and we'd have revival, usually twice a year. And then we'd go to church Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night. And if the Spirit took hold, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. And you get the picture? Lots of church in my background. So for those of you who grew up that way, you might appreciate this joke. And if you did not, we honor you, and you're probably better off. You probably need less therapy than some of us. But little Johnny, you know little Johnny, he was in Sunday school, and he was trying to get these biblical concepts, and the teacher was explaining creation, where everything came from. And he asked a lot of questions, but the thing he was really concerned about was the way humans were made. And so God took the clay and formed Adam, and then from Adam's rib made the woman. He just, wow, it was really fascinating to him. So one day he was out playing in the yard with his brothers and sisters, and he got a little side splint. Have you ever had that happen where, you know, a little kid, and you get an ache in your side, he comes in, he lays down the couch. He's like, Mom, Mom, I think I'm having a wife. So Johnny would be what we would call a biblical literalist, sometimes known as a fundamentalist, someone who believes that the stories in the Bible are meant to be taken as fact, like this literally happened this way. And there's nothing wrong, necessarily, there's nothing that we would stand in judgment of, but what we would teach in Unity is we would want to go to a deeper place of understanding, that to look to the Bible as more than just a book of facts. As a matter of fact, there are actually three relationships we can have with sacred scripture, and this actually would work in any tradition that has sacred scripture. The first would be that relationship where this is my source for all reality, and everything in this really happened, fact. The second relationship, that would be called biblical fundamentalism or literalism. The second is what I would call sort of a deconstructionist, more of a scientific view, where we begin to take these ancient writings from these ancient people who did not speak English ever. You knew that, right? That the Bible was not written in English. Okay. So, and we begin to look at, okay, so what was the original language? And then what was the historical context, the cultural setting into which these words were given? What did they mean to the people they were intended for thousands of years ago? And this begins to, we begin to see that, you know, the ancient people didn't think of fact the way we did. They didn't have a scientific mind. So when it says that the Bible, the world was literally created in 7 days, it wasn't construed as something that needed to be factually true. It was just an accepted understanding. And this is a great freedom. It was for me. I went to Oral Roberts University. Yes, it's true. Speaking of that, there's this beautiful, beautiful bronze 40-foot sculpture of two hands in prayer. Somebody said they used to be open to heaven, but then somebody threw a $10 bill up there. So I don't know if that's true. I don't know. I'm just saying. I was just told that by somebody. But when I was there, it's when I began to deconstruct the faith of my childhood. I saw some things, and it's like, this doesn't quite feel right to me. And I began this deconstructionist phase, and it lasted for about a decade of really kind of pulling at the thread of the sweater of this fundamentalist faith I grew up in. And it was a good thing for me. It was a shifting, what's known in some worlds as a cognitive dissonance, which is always good for our growth. I began to no longer just accept blindly the things I've been taught and find the truth for myself. But I found that this second relationship with the scripture was, it left me dry somehow and hungry for that the deeper meaning that I had used to feel. And then I was introduced to this third way, which is what sometimes is called in Unity, a metaphysical understanding. Sometimes it's called a metaphorical or even a mythical understanding of sacred texts. And then we began to see that there are great truths in these writings, and they're not just, it's not about fact. You know, the difference between fact and truth, the Native Americans had a way of, when telling some of their stories, at least some of the peoples did, they would say, I don't know if any of this happened, but I know it's true. And that's, I'm about to tell a Bible story, and this is a long lead up, I realize, but I want you to understand the context in which I'm delivering this, is that I don't know if any of this happened. My guess is probably not, at least this way. This is an old story that was an oral tradition handed down for generations and generations and generations before it was ever put into any sort of writing. So I would invite you to hold the facts of the story lightly, but I invite you to open your hearts wide for the truth that's here for us. Because in this story, I think there is great truth for our spiritual growth. There is great truth for our quest, for our the revelation of the gift of God that can only come through our lives as our lives. So are you willing to go on this journey with me? All right. So I'm talking about the story of Joseph today. And this is in Genesis chapter 37. There are 19 chapters, and I'm going to read them all right now. I'll read a little bit. I'm going to tell you the story. Many of you know it. And I'm going to kind of dip in and out of the text. The translation I'll be using is the New International Version of the Bible. And of course, that's a recent translation. It has a lot of the more recent, the Dead Sea Scrolls and some of the other later. They were found later, but they're earlier source texts. But the original language was Hebrew and had a lot of different subtle meanings. And this was a story of the ancient Jewish people who had a different understanding of a lot of these things. I'll bring some of that in, but what I really want us to hold is that this story of this ancient people can be alive in us today if we'll go there. So Jacob was my guy. I've been teaching a lot about Jacob. He's the guy that had the dream and the vision of the angels ascending and descending to heaven. On the ladder, he's the guy that wrestled with the angel until he got his blessing. Amazing figure in this tradition. But Jacob had 12 sons. And of those 12 sons, Joseph was his favorite. Any of you come from a large family, kind of know who the favorite is. Dad would never say, but you kind of always had an idea. Well, Jacob made no bones about it. Everybody knew that Joseph was favorite. He gave him this beautiful coat. Now, the clothing that people wore in this time would have been undyed, homespun wool, and so were other fibers, but it would be pretty plain, and in sort of we just got back from Albuquerque. It's kind of brown out there. Did you notice? It's just, and I imagine in a desert community, there was a lot of brown in their clothing, and yet Jacob made it this beautiful coat of great colors, of many colors, for his beloved son Joseph. This signified something. Now, Joseph's brothers, they kind of got the message. This brother is kind of the favorite. Doesn't always feel good to the other brothers. So Joseph didn't help himself any because he would have these dreams. He was a dreamer. And then he would tell about his dreams. And he said, hey, guys, listen to this. I had this dream that we were all like harvesting wheat, and we all had all of these sheaves of wheat, and yet all of yours bowed down to mine. What do you think that means? And then he had another dream. He said, yeah, I had a dream that there were 12 stars or 11 stars in the heavens, and they bowed to me, and the sun and the moon. Mom, Dad, what do you think that means? They bowed to me too. And even Jacob said, okay, watch it with the dreams, all right? You're getting a little full of yourself, as we say in Texas, a little big for your britches. So, this is the way we start the story. They're herding people, and Jacob had sent his sons into a different land to graze the herds, but he hadn't heard from them in a while, so he sends Joseph to find what's going on with his brothers. And that's where we pick up the story in chapter 37, verse 18. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. I told you, they weren't taken too well to these dreams. Here comes that dreamer, they said to each other. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. They had a plan. They did not like what Joseph was doing. But one of his brothers, Reuben, said this. He said he tried to rescue him, and he said, let's not take his life. Don't shed any blood. Throw him into the cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him. Reuben said this to rescue him and then take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe that he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. So, you get the picture. Many of you know the story. Joseph had been set apart as special. A light shining above the others. The others didn't like it. And so they made a plan. And what is I think it's really important, this idea of this robe that he was given. And we're going to come back to it in a moment. But this robe signified his place in this world. I would say even in his worldly identity. A young man chosen and set apart. And because of that chosenness and the resentment that it set up in his family, it was ripped from him. Moving on with the story. Before Reuben could come back and rescue Joseph in the cistern there, the other brothers saw a caravan coming through, and they were slave traders, and so they sold their brother into slavery. So Joseph is taken into Egypt in slavery, and there he is sold into the house of the captain of the guard for the Pharaoh. His name was Potiphar. So now, this high and mighty young man, this one who has... It has been revealed to him that the specialness of his role in the family on earth is now a slave. How many of you have ever had an experience of something special that you want to experience or accomplish, and it looks like it's going to happen, and you're moving that way, and then life throws you a curveball? And it's like, yeah, I see a few nods. Some of us have had that experience of life not quite turning out the way we had hoped. So let's go back to the text and let's see what Joseph does in this situation. And this is in chapter 39 of Genesis. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of the Egyptian master. And when his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of the household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. And from the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. I have not always been able to maintain my sense of chosenness or calling when life has thrown me curveballs. I have often moved into despair and despondency, thinking, though it didn't work out, dang it. And yet Joseph, he seems to be growing where he's planted. It says the Lord was with him. He maintained this understanding that this specialness in his life, his calling, his chosenness, his dream is not dependent on the outer circumstances. I think he may have gone to a Unity church. I'm not sure. And then right back in the text. So, you know, he's having some success. He's got some management skills. It's all working out for Joseph. But this is chapter 40. Chapter 6. And this is right out of the Bible. I am not making this up. Now, Joseph was well-built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph. And she said, come to bed with me. It's all in the Bible. I'm not making this up. There's some great stuff in there if you get in there, I'm telling you. So you know the story, right? So well-built and handsome Joseph catches the eye of his boss's wife, and he knows this is not a good idea. He refused her advances, but she wouldn't quit. And one day, she grabbed him by the cloak and was just going to have her way with him, and he ran away, and she was left holding his cloak. Interesting, isn't it? This is the second time that this robe is taken from our guy. Remember what I'd said? This symbolizes the earthly identity. He was the chosen son of his father. Given this beautiful robe, it was ripped from him. That identity would not last him. Then he's still being who he is. He's now a slave, but he has achieved this status as over everything in the household. He's achieved some success again, and it's ripped from him again. The next thing that happens is he's thrown into prison because the woman tells her husband what happened, tells the other servants. So Joseph is cast into prison. Now not only is he a slave, but he is a prisoner. This is where he says, okay, it was a nice try. It's not going to happen for me. I'm going to let this dream die. Is that right? Who remembers the story from Sunday school? Is that what happened? Nobody remembers. has it been a while? Well, let me tell you, he doesn't give up. He remembers that he's still called to greatness, even in slavery, even in prison. Having both of his robes taken from him, he remembers who he is. And so this is chapter 39, verse 20. While Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. And he showed kindness and granted him favor in eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held there, and he was made responsible for all that was done. The warden paid no attention to anything that was under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in all that he did. See the pattern? The outer identities and successes keep being removed from him. The worldly identities, the good that he had created for himself, is being taken away. And yet, the Lord, which in Hebrew is Elohim, it's the indwelling presence of God, is with him. And in unity, we would say within him. The same life essence that creates galaxies and quasars is the very essence of our lives. And Joseph knew it, knew that God was with him, and allowed this blessing to come through him. And once again, he's elevated. He's elevated to a place of responsibility, a place where he can give his gifts into the world. The next thing that happens, there are two other prisoners in there. I'm going to try and skip to the end of the story. The Pharaoh's cupbearer and baker. No candlestick maker. I believe that was three men in a tub. I think so. But these two guys, they're in prison, and they have dreams, strange, prophetic dreams. And they talk about it. And Joseph is able to interpret their dreams. And to the baker, he says, well, to the cupbearer first, he says, your dream shows that in 3 days' time, you're going to be restored to your former place. All will be forgiven. You will be elevated again into favor. And then the baker said, yeah, what about me? He said, well, in 3 days, you will be executed. And these things came to pass. The cupbearer is restored to favor. He's in the king's court. He's having this great time. But before he goes there, actually, Joseph says to him, remember me to Pharaoh. Remember me to Pharaoh. Tell him what I did for you. Tell him that I've got some skills here. But the cupbearer forgot. And in 3 years, time had passed, Joseph is still in prison, still a slave. How many of you have had a dream of something that was to come about, and when it didn't come about in the time you thought that it should have, you took that as evidence that this was not meant to be? I have done this so many times in my life. Michael Beckwith says this, delay is not denial. Delay is not denial. And Joseph knew that the story wasn't over yet. The next thing that happens is the Pharaoh has this amazing, strange, and sort of scary dream. He dreamt that there were seven sleek and fat cows that came out of the Nile. And they were just beautiful, beautiful cows. And then the next thing that happened was seven skinny and gaunt cows came out, and they devoured the fat cows, and yet they didn't get any fatter. And he didn't understand. I've had some strange dreams, usually after Mexican food. But sometimes, have you ever had a dream that it feels like more than just a dream? I do believe that in the the Eastern teaching, the third eye chakra, the sixth chakra, is the place of dreaming, but also of intuition and psychic knowing and clairvoyance. It is the place of connecting to realms that other ways of knowing that our logical brain has no way of knowing about. And this is what's happening sometimes in our dreams, and this is what happened to Pharaoh. And he asked all of his seers and magicians and soothsayers, I would love to say a sooth sometime, I have no idea what that is, but he had them all come in and to interpret the dream, and they couldn't. They didn't know what it meant. And then the cupbearer remembers, oh, dreams. Yeah, I knew a guy in prison. And he said, there's a man in prison, a Hebrew, and he has this amazing power. And so Joseph, who had not given up on his dream, despite all of the horrible things that have befallen him, is brought into the Pharaoh's presence. And the Pharaoh tells him his dream, and there was another dream that came after, very much like the first one, with some grains of wheat. And Joseph said, the Pharaoh said, I've been told that you have the power to interpret my dream. And here's what Joseph said. Actually, I want to read it because I want to get it just right. He says, I cannot do it. Joseph replied to the Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. At this point, I think Joseph had known that the rough edges, the corners, may have been knocked off of his arrogance a little bit by life. Prison and slavery might do that to you. And he knew that it wasn't his own power. It wasn't the earthly, egoic mind that was doing this. It was this divine power within. It was God, the one life, the one source, the one presence, the one power that was moving through him. And he said, the human I cannot do this, but God can. And so Joseph interprets the dream for the Pharaoh. He tells them that Egypt will experience 7 years of great plenty and abundance in harvest, followed by 7 years of famine. And that what Pharaoh should do is find some wise and trustworthy man who has good management skills to oversee the harvest in the 7 years of plenty and set it aside so that the people will not perish in the 7 years of famine. And there's so much truth and so much validity and authority in Joseph's words that Pharaoh recognizes it and he says, you're the guy. You're the one who will do this work for me. And so Joseph is elevated to the second highest position in the most powerful nation on earth. From slavery, from prison, he has placed in the right place to give his gift in a way that can serve others. His family, in the famine, Jacob hears that they have grain in Egypt. And so he sent the brothers to Egypt to barter for any grain so their family will not starve. And they come into the court and Joseph recognizes them and they don't know who he is. How could they? How could they know who he is? And he doesn't let on. He plays a little game with them, and through a series of interesting things, he has them bring his younger brother Benjamin in, and then he finally reveals himself to his brothers. And this would be in probably a Greek tragedy. This would be the place where the sword comes out and says, now I shall have my vengeance. Does anybody remember? Is this what he did? No. He forgave them. And this really is the essence of what I want you to take from the story of Joseph. He says, Genesis 50:20, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish that which is now being done, the saving of many lives. You were planning evil against me, but God intended it for good. We all have a dream. And what I mean by dream is not a goal. It's not something you can achieve or acquire. It is the giving of your particular gift into our world. It is a way of living your life of such freedom and such abundance and such grace that it is the only way that will ever feel exactly right for you to live. That is your dream. We believe sometimes that our dream will come true when we get what we want, What I want to tell you today is that your dream will come true when you give what you are, despite the circumstances. There is some authentic nature in you, some unique expression of God's life that can only be experienced as you. And if you and I will trust it, reveal it, regardless what they say, regardless of how it looks, that's what I'm talking about today, that there's a calling upon your life to be the authentic expression of God that you are. And I can't tell you what that looks like. For some of you, it may mean, if you were really to do this, you might throw out your whole career, even at this point in life, and do the thing that has always been in your heart to do, but you've been afraid to. For some of you, it may have nothing to do with work, but it may instead be that you begin to show up in your family with authentic tenderness and vulnerability, and you've been afraid to do that. But there is a calling upon your life to deliver the gift of God that you are more fully and more freely. And that's the dream. That is the dream. So I'd like us to really take away, actually, three things. And this is why I go back to the iPad, make sure I get them right. Because I could make up three new ones today, and that's not what I'm going to do. Don't deny the facts, but don't believe them either. The facts of your life, the circumstances, are not the truth. They're just facts. And they are apt to change when our mind is changed. And so what we see from Joseph is that no matter where he was, no matter what was happening, he was true to himself, true to the gift of God, acknowledging that the gift came through him from God, and the facts changed, and they'll change again. See, everything in the world of form will change. And if you don't like the circumstances, you don't like the facts, well, we have this great thing we teach here called the law of mind action, that we can actually call into mind the truth of who we are in God and see the facts change. Ernest Holmes said, "Our job is to stand in hell and declare heaven." So don't deny the facts. We don't stand in hell going, "I don't see no flames." No. That doesn't work. I've seen people in Unity write checks on the faith that God would put money in the bank account before the check came through. That's not what we're teaching. Especially not to this church, right, Sherry? We don't do that. We don't deny the facts. These are the facts. I am in prison. I am a slave, whatever those things are. And those are metaphorical and metaphysical too. All of us are in slavery or in prison to old ideas and limited thoughts of who we are and what God is and how the world works. We all are. And our work, doesn't matter how long you've been in Unity, doesn't matter how long you've been doing your therapy, your 12 steps, your spiritual growth, it doesn't matter. There is always greater freedom and greater joy and greater life for you. The second thing, forgive others and self. You wonder why your dream doesn't come true? Often it's because of unhealed resentment. Unforgiveness is like drinking poison, hoping the other guy dies. And Joseph, knowing the truth that there is a God greater than all of these circumstances, when he had the opportunity to get his revenge, what did he do? He forgave. Your unforgiveness is a block to receiving the gift of your dream fulfilled. And then the last thing is, don't limit your dream. Don't limit your dream. Don't limit the way that your unique expression of spirit, how big it can get, how much good it can do, how many people it can bless. Don't think that you've got it all figured out, because you don't. In our human knowing, we only see part. But when God sees someone who is open, willing, to be led by intuition, to be released from the judgment of others, how many of you have stopped giving a gift into the world because you were afraid of what people would say? That has been a huge one for me. My fear of the judgment and criticism of others has kept me from my dream so many times. I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm just not going to do it. But life is too short. The Gospel of Thomas says, if you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. The stakes are high for what I'm talking about today. The stakes are high. I'm talking about living a life worthy of your soul, or living a life of limitation and lack and safety. We had a great speaker this week at the convention, Greg Lavoie. You know, we talk about better safe than sorry. He says, there's no guarantee that when you're safe, you might still be sorry. Making the choice for safety, for security, will often keep us from freedom and greatness. So what I want you, and I have no idea, I just know that these words were important for me to tell you today. I have no idea what you're going to do with them. But my hope is that you will begin to look at those places where you bought into your own limitation. Richard Bach, I think, was the one who said it, argue for your limitations and they are yours. Yeah. The law works. So you're called to do something, you're called to experience something. How many of you have been like, you know, talking about this abundance stuff for a long time, and yet you're still not living in it? And you have a million excuses as to why. Argue for your limitations, and surely they are yours. So I'm hoping today that we will all be re-inspired and recommitted to trusting God knows what it's doing as our lives. Emerson says, the fact that I am here shows me that the universe, he would say the soul, but the universe had need of an organ. Shall I not assume the post? We're all waiting for you to drop your defenses and drop your need to have it all figured out and to step out into your life in a way of trust and faith and joy and givingness. We love you. We need you. Show us who you are. Thank you. A little later, I'm going to do a song that talks about going down to the river for a sense of peace and safety. And as I was driving in this morning, he's like, that may not play so well here right now. Given what you all have gone through, and we've had it down in Houston too. I've had several of my choir members lost everything in the floods. But there is a metaphor for the river being a symbol of peace and the gentle movement of God's energies. And so as I move us into a little meditation, this old hymn is what wanted to be sung this morning. So I invite you to put anything down that's in your lap. Find your breath. Close your eyes and open your heart if you're comfortable doing so, and letting these words open us to an experience of God's presence. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well, it is well with my soul, it is well with my soul.
is well, it is well with my soul. So I invite you to breathe fully and deeply, holding this thought in mind and no other. It is well. It is well. In this moment, we fill our awareness with this one thought. It is well. And it is well because the life of God, everywhere present, everywhere perfect, everywhere available, this is the source of our good. This is the source of our wellness. This is the source of our very life. And so with each breath, we draw into ourselves a deeper awareness of the goodness of God, given freely, only awaiting our acceptance, our receptivity. And so in this moment, where is it that we need to know it is well with my soul? What is the area in which we're experiencing pain, separation, lack, illness? Just allow it to come into mind. We don't deny the facts of life. We simply know there is a greater truth to be revealed. So as Joseph in prison, in slavery, remembered that God was with him, moving through him in power and grace, so we too call upon this power, this grace. It is well with my soul. It is well, it is well. Surrounding this situation with love, with light, with possibility, with grace. We draw into our experience that which is a greater reflection of our truth. We release that which no longer serves. So whether this be in the area of relationship, finances, health, and well-being, whatever it is, we simply release whatever it is that stands in the way of our good. And we draw into our experience as easily as we draw breath into our body, the goodness of God, receiving it, trusting it, allowing it right now, right now. And Lord, haste the day when the faith shall be sight, the clouds be rolled back as a scroll, the trumpet shall sound, and the truth shall be known. Even now it is well with my soul. If you know this, you can sing it with me. It is well with my soul. Accept it. We revel in this truth right now. It is well. It is well.
It is well.